Where else can we turn but to you, Lord Jesus, gracious God, Holy One? Allow us, Lord God, to be so filled with your glory that the pleasures of this world would not mean anything to us anymore. For Jesus' sake. Amen. Well, I think we can give ourselves a clap. We managed to get through 2023. One clap. Thanks, Matt. Well, for some people, it's been a great year. We've done well. Maybe the business has succeeded. Maybe you're not so tight with your cash anymore. Maybe it's been a fantastic year in terms of relationships for you, and it's been a wonderful time. But for others, it's been a hard year, a difficult year, where you'd like to erase the thoughts of what's happened in the business, or you've had tragic loss, and you're wondering how you're ever going to deal with not seeing a family member again. And in some way, you just want to get to the end of 2023 and hope that 2024 doesn't have the same tragedy that you had. Somehow you want to just push Control Alternate Delete and wipe out 2023. But as I've said to folk who have lost loved ones, that's not the best idea, because if you're going to do that, you probably wipe away all the good memories as well. Imagine wiping away everything that you've learned over this past year. Can you imagine getting to varsity and saying, well, I don't remember a thing I learned in matric. I'm going to have to go back, as Steph was saying, go back to pre-primary if you're in grade one, or you're going to have to go back to matric if you are at varsity, because you pressed Control Alternate Delete and you wiped off every memory that you had of school. Perhaps a better analogy is not to wipe off everything, but to remember the lessons learned and to start afresh. I don't know if all dogs are the same, but from time to time we've had a dog who would find the most foul-smelling mud that ever existed, and he would happily go and roll in that mud. Maybe it was a dead hardy dog or something like that, and he would seek this thing out and he would go and roll in it. And you'd come back from a walk and you'd think, oh my goodness, he's been at it again. And then you'd have to go through the whole process of trying to clean this dog off. Paul is trying to get the people in Ephesus to understand how stinky they really are. Wonderfully illustrated through our children's talk. All the horrible things that we don't even consider to be bad are smelt by everybody else. And if we're going to really make a New Year's resolution that holds, I want you to be more godly. Christ wants you to be more godly. I want you to want to be more godly. And how do we do that? Well, it was read to us in Ephesians, but I don't know. Maybe the kids can help me out here. I've got a picture up on the screen. I want you to tell me if you think little Eddie is dirty. Okay? Do you think Eddie's dirty? Do you think he's been washing that dog that rolls in the bed hard? Do you think he's really filthy dirty? Do you think it's only his front, or do you think it's his back as well? From what we can see, it's mostly his front, because his shoulders look to be okay. Is he the dirtiest person you've ever seen? No, probably not. Because when you speak to Mr. Eddie, Mr. Eddie is a little bit dirtier because he works in a coal mine. Now we know, because he works in a coal mine, that he is really filthy dirty. He comes up and he comes home and there's coal dust up his nose and in his ear. There's coal dust everywhere. So little Eddie says, well, at least I'm not really dirty. Think of Mr. Eddie. He works in a coal mine. That's disgusting. He comes home and his whole bath is filthy dirty. When he pulls the plug, there's a big ring around the bath of coal dust. It is disgusting. But you see, when we start to compare ourselves to everybody else. We are like little Eddie. We say we're not as bad as somebody else. We're actually quite good. We're not that bad. We're not as dirty as somebody else. But you see, when Jesus says we've got to be clean, he says we need to be like Dr. Eddie. Who's the cleanest there? Dr. Eddie has now scrubbed himself up. He's going to perform an operation. Who would you like to operate on you? Which one of those? Which one? Huh? The one in the black, the one in the brown, or the one in the blue? Blue. Why do you want him to operate on you? Because you don't want somebody with filthy, dirty hands coming and sticking your fingers, their fingers into your ribcage, huh? No, gross, yuck. Okay, so what happens most times is when we say we're not as bad as all that, we are like little Eddie. We can always look at somebody else and we can say, at least I'm not as sinful as so-and-so. You must know what they get up to. And yet when we come to real life in Christ, we're not to compare ourselves to somebody who we can compare ourselves to negatively and say, well, we're not as bad as that. What we've really got to do is we've got to compare ourselves to somebody who's purer. Everybody loves to read the Sermon on the Mount, and the wonderful ideas like loving everybody and not judging anyone, and it all should go well. But Jesus doesn't really say that. At the end, well, not halfway through the Beatitudes, halfway through the Sermon on the Mount, in Matthew 5:48, Jesus says, no good comparing yourself to somebody else who is a sinner. Compare yourself to me. Matthew 5:48. Be perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect. Okay, so there we've got our illustrations. Who are we comparing ourselves to? When Steph was sticking all those bad things onto poor old Ross there. That's the longest I've seen Ross quiet for, with a sticker over his mouth. But horrible, horrible words. Who are we comparing ourselves to? Are we comparing ourselves to our spouse? Or to the person who has just murdered or raped an individual? Are we comparing ourselves to Christ and saying, well, I'm really quite good? When we go through the list that is in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus emphasizes that we're not as righteous as we think we are. God's going to judge the thought behind the murder, the thought behind the adultery. He's going to judge our motives through divorce and promises that are broken and retribution and love. So in 2024, what we really need to be looking at is what Jesus says. Let me try and find the verse. Matthew chapter 5, verse 19. Anyone who breaks the least of these commandments and teaches others to do the same will be called least in the kingdom of heaven. But whoever practices and teaches these commands will be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Now here's the verse. For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven. Okay, so we've always looked at the teachers of the law as being a little bit dirtier than us. Well, in fact, they were quite righteous. We're actually the dirtiest. The teachers of the law were pretty good. And Jesus says you've got to be better than the teachers of the law. How on earth are we going to get there? Jesus says, just beware. He starts Matthew 6 by saying, be careful. There's danger ahead. There's danger ahead for religious people because they like to parade their religiosity. So there are dangers for Christians because we like to show other people our reputation through prayer and fasting and judging others and not trusting God. Or we protect our assets. We don't give to the needy. We safeguard our treasures. We worry about life. So Paul says, what we must do is we need to take off that old self.
dispense with the old self and put on something else. It's easier to understand, having come through Christmas festivities, when there are ladies around. And whenever a lady gets given a gift of a dress or an item of clothing, the person giving the item of clothing says, put it on. Put it on. I want to see what it looks like on you. Put it on. Put it on. And so the chant grows in the lounge, wherever you're opening presents. Put it on. Put it on. Put it on. Now, it really won't be of any use at all if the lady's got a new dress and she just shoves it over herself and says, there, what does it look like? That's not really any use at all. What really needs to happen is whoever it is who has the item of clothing, the guy with his new t-shirt or whatever else, should remove themselves. They take off the old clothes and they put on the new clothes. Taking off the old self without replacing it with new clothes means to say, well, we'll just go back to what we were wearing before. It's not just the taking off of the old self that is necessary, but it's the putting on of the new self. In other words, we can't be filled with the Spirit of God at the same time being filled with our old ways. You've got to dispense with the old ways in order to be filled with the Spirit. As deliberate as it is for me to think about, consider, take out of my cupboard and put on the clothes that I'm wearing today, so I need to thoughtfully, deliberately, intentionally decide every morning to take off the works of the flesh and put on the works of the Spirit. Okay, that's what we must do. My second question is, why should we do it? This is a little bit more difficult. The easy answer is because it's the right thing to do. Those who are a little bit older will know that I picked up that catchphrase from an advertisement. Remember when they said, pay your TV licenses? It's the right thing to do. How many people suddenly thought, you know what? That's correct. It is the right thing to do. I better go and pay my TV license today. That wasn't really a motivation to do the right thing, was it? Maybe you paid your TV license because you knew that it would be honoring to the Lord to pay the debt that is due. As soon as you tell somebody to do something because it's the right thing to do, they might answer you, according to whose standards? Who makes the rules? Who says it's the right thing to do? Is it not just society forcing me into a mold that I didn't make? Maybe other people will say, it's not really profitable. I mean, what good is it me paying my TV license? I don't watch SABC anyway. You see, we've got all sorts of excuses for not doing what we don't want to do. Our hearts need to be changed. You walk outside and there's a guy stealing your copper piping from outside your house. What is your reasoning for telling him to stop? Stop it. It's the right thing to do. Now go away and don't ever steal copper. No. He's not going to be moved by that comment. Stop it. You didn't pay for it. What's your motivation in saying stop stealing the copper pipes? What would your motivation be to a prostitute who is sending her child to a private school and she's paying for medical aid through her lifestyle, whereas as a secretary she could hardly even put bread on the table, let alone send her children to school? What is your motivation to say stop doing what you're doing? It's the right thing to do. No. What about a person looting a truck on the N2? You stop your car as a dutiful citizen behind him and you say, stop doing that. It's the right thing to do. You should not steal. It doesn't belong to you. I can see all of those guys saying, come back guys, put it all back in the truck, let's go. No, that's not a motivation. You see, our whole society has drifted so far from the norms and the morals of the Bible that people are becoming more and more godless. Just look at the list in Ephesians, the list that was read to us, the list that Steph put onto Ross. Lies, anger, theft, foul and destructive speech, godlessness, bitterness, rage, anger, brawling, slander, malice. That sounds like today. So what's the biblical motivation for putting off that old self? It's not just, we need to be a little bit less antisocial. These are desires that are contrary to God's will. If we start seeing these elements creeping into society, we will know that God's judgment is coming. It's almost like not putting oil into the car. If you've got a car and you're driving your car, I trust that you check your oil regularly, even if it is a new car. Why? Because your engine will seize if the engine does not have oil. You say, but I'm a student and I can't afford oil. Then you shouldn't afford a car. Because your car is going to break down when you least likely want it to happen. Why do I need to change? Because if I don't change, I'm ignoring the warning signs that are going to lead to my own destruction. Look at Ephesians 4. One warning light that comes on is hardness of heart. This is a good reason to change. What's hardness of heart? Porion is the word that is used in Greek. I'm told that it's a type of marble found in the Mediterranean region. It's another word that was used for a callus on a foot or on a hand. It's a hardness. It's almost like a hardening of the arteries. If your doctor says that there is something wrong with you, it's a warning sign. And Paul is using that as a warning sign to say, watch out, danger ahead. If you don't take note of it now, you might be in for a really hard time. Hardness of heart. The other one is darkness of understanding. Where you're deliberately not listening to those who are telling the truth. A couple of months ago, I went to the doctor. I thought it was a regular checkup. The doctor said to me, I've got hypertension, high blood pressure. And he prescribed me a pill, literally that big. It's the teeniest, tiniest pill. Now, there are one of two things I could do. Either I could listen to the doctor and I can take the pill, as small and insignificant as it is. Or I could choose to do my own thing. Just pull down the shutters and say, I'm okay, I don't feel any different. The pill hasn't made me feel any different either, so I might as well just carry on. There's a warning sign. And the major warning sign for me is that my dad died of a massive heart attack because he wasn't taking his blood pressure tablets. Now, due to the hardening of my heart, I might choose not to go to the doctor because I might have high blood pressure. Physically speaking, the loss is going to be huge for me. It's going to mean death. Or I can get the advice of the doctor, or I can shut him down. That's the darkness of understanding. Where I know what is wrong, but I'm still choosing to cut myself off from that. Listen to the words of Jesus in John 3. This is the verdict. Light has come into the world, but men love darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates light and will not come into the light for fear that his deeds will be exposed. Right, so those are two options. Hardening of heart, darkness of understanding. The third one in verse 18 is we become ignorant of reality. In other words, we close our minds to even the evil that we're doing and we carry on doing what we know is wrong. Ephesians 4 verses 18 and 19. They are darkened in their understanding, separated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to the hardening of their hearts. Having lost all sensitivity, they've given themselves over to sensuality, so to indulge in every kind of impurity with a continual lust for more. Back to my picture. It's very easy to see the dirt on somebody else. It's not so easy to see the dirt on yourself. And so it's easy to see the people who are out there committing bad crimes, and we look at them and we say, you know what? They're never going to learn unless they go to jail. They're just getting worse and worse and worse. And that's true. Once you've committed one murder, a second murder is easier. When you've committed 24 murders, you don't even think about killing somebody else. Sorry, I'm not speaking from personal experience. I just know that to be true in terms of sin. Not because I know the mind and the heart of a murderer, but because I know my own heart. And every time I sin, the next sin just becomes easier. So when verse 19 says, I've lost all sensitivity, I've given myself over to sensuality, so as to indulge in every kind of impurity with a continual lust for more, that's my warning sign. I'm going downhill, and without some intervention, the wages of sin is death. So, my final point, very briefly, we've understood we must take off the old self, put on the new self. We've understood why, because that's the warning sign of worse things. How can we do it? I can tell you right now that sheer willpower will not allow you to change in 2024. No matter how much you think you want to change, it's not going to help. Writing it down as one of your New Year's resolutions. I'm going to do less of this and more of that. New Year's resolution in the front page of your diary is going to get lost. By the 3rd of January, you're wondering, what was it that I promised to do? And by the 3rd of February, you've forgotten it altogether. It's got to be something greater. There's got to be a deeper purpose. Putting off your old self is no good if you're left to drool over something you've been forbidden to do. You're just going to face the same issue again. Putting off your old self to replace it with another vice is just as bad. Can you imagine the person who is no longer addicted to cocaine rejoicing because at least he's not addicted to cocaine, now he's addicted to porn? What use is that? You've got to give up something and fill the space with something else. The more engaged you are in something that you delight in, the less you think of the sin that you once longed for. I'm going to change illustration here. Thought of a better illustration. One of the dads told me, hope he's not going to be listening on tape. One of the dads told me that his son, for 3 weeks, did not take off his Springbok rugby shirt. He was so proud of the Bokker that from the time we won by 1 point for the first time, he wasn't going to betray the Springboks for the second test. We got through the semi-final and they had to pry his shirt off. I think they actually washed it and gave it back to him wet, so at least he didn't stink quite so much. But for 3 weeks, he kept his Springbok rugby jersey on. What happened to that young man? No other shirt in the cupboard mattered as much as his Springbok rugby jersey. You could tempt him with whatever you wanted to. He wasn't going to shift. He wanted that jersey alone. Now, can you imagine, spiritually speaking, if we were so captivated by the love and the grace and the forgiveness and the joy of the Lord that nothing else, no other sin mattered. You pushed it aside because living for Christ was more important than the old way of life. There was a higher, deeper, more significant longing for Jesus than there was for that sin. Sorry, I'm going to keep on the rugby illustration, seeing as though I'm there. Can you imagine not having eaten your supper by the time we were playing the last 5 minutes of the rugby final? And your wife says to you, please would you go and buy the meat because I'm really and truly hungry. Nothing removes you from watching the last 5 minutes with 1 point difference. You are captivated. You will not shift. For somebody who couldn't care less about rugby, braaiing is far more attractive. I will go and braai, they say, any day, rather than to sit and endure 90 minutes of rugby. You see how a different perspective will help us to understand what is greater priority. A greater priority for any Christian is not to say, oh, well, you know, the Ten Commandments say that I shalt not, but, yeah, there's got to be a way around it. I'm going to overcome this. Just sheer willpower. That's not going to help you. Sheer willpower will not let go of sin. You've got to put off the sin in order to surpass that with the joy of the Lord. Putting aside the desires of the sinful nature and turning to light. Getting a greater love for Jesus is far more worthwhile than saying no to sin because of your own strength. It's being inwardly renewed day by day. Far more than just a facade or a makeover. It's walking with Jesus and saying every morning that you wake up, I'm putting off sin and I'm putting on righteousness. Just before I recap, listen to this final quote from John Piper. When the master says, change your clothes, they adjust their collars, they shine their shoes, they tuck in their shirts, but they won't take off those cherished habits. They won't strip off the old attitudes of racism, the love of money, the addiction to pornography. They want the hope of heaven, but they won't dress for heaven. They won't change their clothes. And Jesus says in the end on graduation day, bind him hand and foot and cast him into outer darkness. He had never really enrolled with his heart. It was all a show. If I can suggest just one New Year's resolution that will probably make every New Year's resolution fall into place, I want to be more like Jesus. Pure in every way. I want to put off the old self and I want to put on the new self, being renewed day by day. My sole desire for 2024 is to become more like Jesus. That's what we must do. Why must we do it? Because the warning signs are evident. If we don't put it off, we're going to falter, we're going to fail, and we're going to go away from Christ. How can we do it? In the strength of the Lord, as long as we're making him number one in our lives. Would you pray with me? Gladly would I leave behind me all the pleasures I have known to pursue surpassing treasures at the throne of God the Son. Gladly would I give to Jesus all affection, everything, for the washing of his mercy makes my ransomed heart to sing. Where else can I go? Jesus, you're the one I was made to know. I pray personally, Lord, and I ask that everybody here prays individually that you would become greater and our sinful selves would become less, for the glory of your name.